Okay, so my statistics. My sobriety day is August 1st of 2017. That was the day that a loving God that I didn't know that I had, didn't want, and certainly didn't think that I needed separated me from alcohol. But long before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, or before I even picked up my first drink, I believe that I suffered a little bit from that spiritual malady, or what we call the unmanageability of step one. Somewhere along growing up in my life, I decided that who I am is not good enough, and I created this false character, this false self, this self-centered, egocentric self, as our book likes to call it. But I have no idea, because I haven't even had a drink yet. But I know at a young age, I'm starting to compare myself to everyone else. Well, that group over there, well, those popular people, well, that one, they don't like me. She looked at me wrong. Things like that started to plague me from a young age, but I didn't think so. What I suffered from, even before I picked up alcohol, was I started running from people, places, and problems right away when I had a teenage years. And when I discovered alcohol, all of a sudden, all that noise in my head and running from those people, places, and problems got a lot quieter for me. But again, I don't know that I suffer from alcoholism, because I think I know a lot about what alcoholism looks like. My dad is a self-admitted alcoholic who still drinks to this day. His brother, my uncle, would pass away from this disease. 2 years before I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I lost my cousin, that uncle who died, his son, to this disease of alcoholism. So my idea of what an alcoholic looked like was not me. But looking backwards, I live life forwards and I understand it backwards. I can see that as soon as I picked up that first drink at an Italian wedding in New Jersey, typical, 100 Italians on his side of the family, my side's marrying in and there's 7 or 8 of us. I don't even know that I feel uncomfortable in my own skin, because I'm like the actor. As our book says, right in the fifth step, it says, I want to enjoy a certain reputation, even though in my heart I don't think so. When I graduated high school, where I'll sign each other's yearbooks, somebody wrote in my yearbook, I'm amazed by you, and I wish I could be just like you and how you don't take anyone personally. I remember that hitting my heart, being like, wow, I'm fake, I'm a fraud. Because I may not be demonstrating those behaviors outwards, but, man, I would go home and I'd be like, I can't stand that girl. She should, this and that. You know, the gossip in my head, even though I may not have been doing outwards, I wasn't comfortable in my own skin. And I had no idea, because I'm trying to make up for that by making everything look perfectly on the outside. But I don't know that. So I end up graduating high school, and I go off to college, because again, if I can wrest happiness and satisfaction out of this world, if I just manage well, if I just get that college education, I don't understand that I have fantasies of, if I just had this, and if my life looked like this, then I could be happy. I had a lot of if-then scenarios running through my head, and I wasn't aware of it. I was too attached to living in a delusion of what alcoholism was doing to me. I picked up that first drink at 13 at that wedding. I didn't stop or slow down. But I thought I knew what alcoholism looked like based on my family, and I thought that was somebody who got up every morning and hit the bottle right away. And that's not the truth, and that's not what the big book says. But I haven't been to Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't read your big blue book wrapped in a ribbon of promise, so I don't know anything yet. I just know gradually things are getting pretty worse for me. When I left college, I decided it'd be a great idea to get married, because I don't want to go back to that family of mine. See, I'm an only child, and the way I was is I was always a victim to that family. I valued playing a victim. My mom can be mentally unstable. She's been to a lot of therapists, and I believe that she has some undiagnosed things along with OCD. My dad's a drunk. He just hasn't made his way in here. I know that they did the best they could, but I don't want to go back home. So I meet a man. Oh, that'll fix me. At that wedding of mine, we had an engagement party. My dad beat up the best man. Perfect timing for me to play the victim in that scenario. Because I don't understand that what other people do says nothing about me. That other people have problems and react poorly and do stupid, crazy things just like I did. But I can't see beyond my own nose. How dare you? That's how I live my life. How dare you and let me be the victim to that? So I would marry that man to get away from my family, would move down to Maryland, and for a year and a half, I would drink and I would not come home from happy hours after work. I couldn't see that I was the problem. I blamed him for everything. Well, he just got out of the Navy. He didn't go to college yet, and he's you know, starting off with, you know, basic college level classes to take basic math and hanging out with people that are younger than me. So I'm playing the victim to everything. How dare you not have your stuff together? Don't you know who I am? I just graduated college, but I'm out at the bar getting drunk and you don't know when I'm going to come home. But I can't see that I'm the problem because I'm a pessimist and a victim and it's always your fault. I would land myself in a lot of therapy to figure out how I could fix you. And I could never hear the truth from those therapists, nor did I actually give them the actual truth. Our book says we spent a lot of money going to them and lying to them. I just wasn't able to hear at that time. I could tell you a ton of horrible things that happened to me while I was drinking, but that's not what this is about. It says we described in a general way what we were like, not what it was like. What I was like was uncomfortable in my own skin, but I didn't know it because I was faking it. What I was like was I acted like I had a really high self-esteem of myself, but I had a really low self-esteem, and that's why I had to project all my hate, blame, and victimhood to everyone else. That I liked playing a really scary movie in my head, being the victim, and staying at the center of my own universe, being the star of that scary movie. And I didn't know it. And what would end up happening to me is another decade of debacles and incomprehensible demoralization, swearing it off once again the morning after. See, anything that I promise never to do again, that I actually do again, is the definition of powerlessness. See, I don't have a problem with gambling. I can go to the local Circle K and I can pick up a couple lottery tickets. But my best thinking doesn't tell me to go on Friday when I get that paycheck to go gamble it all away again and again and again because I don't have a problem with gambling. So I can't go to out of Gambling Anonymous and work the 12 steps with you because I don't understand that problem. I don't have a problem with overeating. I'm not going to go buy a 12 Dunkin' Donut donuts and come home and smash through those. But what alcoholism is I suffer from an allergy that once I pick up the first drink, I don't know how many drinks I'm going to have. It may be 3 or it may be 33. The book says the only way to solve the allergy is complete abstinence. Well, I've tried that hundreds of times. What happens in my mind when I stop drinking eventually is my mind is like a pressure cooker and it begins to tell me it's a good idea to drink. See, I've been brainwashed my entire life by family and friends that have told me, Beth, your life would get so much better if you would just stop drinking. And see, it would for a little while, the frothy emotional appeal of their promises to me. See, the laundry would get done and put away. The dishes would get done. I'd go to work and I'd not play on Facebook and buy crap on Amazon. And they'd actually get 40 hours a week out of me. And then that began to wear on me because I didn't understand the disease of alcoholism, that not only am I powerless over alcohol, but the disease centers in my mind, that my life is unmanageable by me. I ended up divorced from that gentleman. And I thought, well, you know what? What'll fix me is being alone. I just need to be alone and be by myself. And you know what? If I'm by myself and figure things out and I'm not, you know, sleeping around for the next year, then that'll fix me. See, I had hundreds of ideas of what's going to fix me next. If I get that next job, you know what? I'm just going to quit that job at Giant of Maryland and I'm going to go work for that other company. That'll fix me. But see, that never fixed me. So I ran in Massachusetts. And I ran through a couple of boyfriends there. And I ran through debacles. I broke both of my feet due to my drunkenness. Why I'm in flats. And I will probably live in flats for the rest of my life and never wear heels. But that's beside the point. When I broke my foot the last time, it was my driver's foot and I needed to be taken care of. So I came back to New Jersey. And I moved in with my dad and his family. My parents got divorced when I was 30. My dad remarried a woman that I couldn't stand. And again, I was once again the victim. But I was hanging out with my dad on a 2-day bender because the only normal life, as the doctor's opinion says, was the one that I knew where I got up and I met my dad at Thursday morning at 9:00 in the morning in front of the liquor store. We pick up what we need. We go back to his house. We start drinking. He lives across the street from this beautiful lake. They have lifeguards on it. It's absolutely stunning. I proceed to drink, but I get tired of passing out. I'm at that stage where I'm getting so drunk too soon, and I'm passing out. So Friday morning rolls around, and I've got my paycheck. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is singleness of purpose. But I will tell you that I added dry goods to it. And so at 9 a.m. when I met him at the liquor store again, and we went and sat on his front porch, that beach across the street was supposed to open up at 10 a.m. See, that God that I didn't understand and didn't want especially when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, that when my sponsor asked me to pray, I said, not doing it. That God, that power that was greater than me, whatever you want to call yours, was looking after me, but I couldn't see it then. I never see it when I'm in it, because I have the disease of alcoholism that lays in my mind. Alcoholism is a self-talking disease, never satisfied, judgmental, opinionated mind of myself and others. And I don't know that. So by 10 a.m. when they're supposed to open up the beach, and this is how God worked in my life that day. Hindsight is always 20/20. They were doing water quality checks and the water wasn't up to par. That beach didn't open up, and if it would have opened up, I would have been at that beach at 10 a.m. sitting over there by myself on my beach chair laid out in the sun, and I would have stopped breathing, and I would have been alone, and I would have died. But instead, what God did for me that I didn't know he was doing for me was I went down in front of my dad and I stopped breathing on his front porch. I'm an only child, and he watched his little girl, and he had no idea what was going on. In the state of New Jersey, they haul you off to the hospital, and it's a mandatory of 6 hours when anything is drugs or alcohol related. And again, here's how God shows up in my life. The man from behavioral health that morning broke his anonymity. See, I had to sit there for 6 hours, and just like other times when I've experienced incomprehensible demoralization of the next morning where, oh my God, is my car in the driveway? I'm never going to do that again. I had the 6 hours of saying that kind of stuff. That guy from behavioral health showed up, and he did what our book tells us to do. He told me about him. He told me what happened to him. And because he kept it in the eye, he didn't say, you need to, you should, the things that my family had been saying to me for years. I'm a defiant alcoholic. I don't like to be told what to do. But because he kept it in the eye and he shared his experience with me, I had a moment of clarity where I began to relate to him. Short-lived moment of clarity, but enough to plant the seed. That father of mine had to sit outside that room, and he sat there for 6 hours. He could see me through a little tiny window. He wasn't allowed in to see me, and I thought, how dare they? But here's how self or self-centeredness, the root of our troubles. When I left that hospital, and I'd been 12-step by that man who asked me to go to a meeting that night, and who told my father that I needed to go to a meeting that night, I got in the car with my dad, and we proceeded back to his house. He's about 40 minutes south of where I live. He had called my mother. See, they don't like each other. My dad left my mom for a younger woman, and she's deaf. So that was plenty of a reason for all of us on that side of the family to play the victim to the whole that and make him the bad guy. He had called my mother, and I started screaming at him, how dare you? Because I can't see past my own nose and my own selfish self-centeredness. I'm his only little girl. I'm his only child. And I don't give two hoots what just occurred on his front porch and how scared he might be. I'm just thinking about me. How dare you involve my mom? Because now I can't con and manipulate her if I need something. The gig is up. And he wants me to go to rehab, and all I can think about is I'm going to lose my job. I. Whenever there's a lot of I in my vocabulary, I normally know that that's a good indication that I am in the self-centeredness that our book talks about. So I screamed at him on the way home because I'm the victim now. How dare you? But here's how ego and pride rebuild at an astonishing rate, and what the disease of alcoholism is so cunning, baffling, and powerful. See, I have a mental obsession beyond human aid. These are thoughts that hijack my mind without my permission and tell me it's a good idea to have a drink. Out of nowhere, I just had a near-death experience, upset my entire family in the hospital, and all of a sudden the thought hijacks my mind that I just want relief, and on the way home, that 40-minute drive, I stop at the liquor store. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. But I haven't been here. I don't understand what the problem is. So I don't think that I suffer from alcoholism. I just think that I've changed my mind. See, I live in the delusion that nothing's ever going to happen to me. For some reason, I think I'm bulletproof, when really I'm just a relief-seeking missile. Relief from myself and what goes on up here. I can't show up to life and handle problems. I can't handle sobriety on my own, and I don't know that. But he had told my family about going to a meeting. And see, I want to be seen as a good girl, because I want a pat on the back. Because I need others' validation. I need my family to be happy with me. They say scratch an alcoholic, find a codependent. I did go to that meeting. I went to that meeting drunk. And thank God for you responsible people that knew that even when someone is drunk in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, we love them. They loved me enough. See, I'd been in therapy for a couple years before this, and that therapist had been telling me that I needed to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I needed to get a sponsor, and I was lying, and I thought he believed me. Turns out he didn't, but I thought he did. That night, a woman came up to me, and she took me by the hand, and she led me through that meeting, and she said, I want you to say you have a desire not to drink. See, again, I haven't read your big blue book yet, so I don't understand that a desire not to drink earns me a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. But it's not enough to keep me sober. Self-knowledge, knowing that I'm an alcoholic, sitting here and saying, hi, I'm Beth, I'm an alcoholic, not enough to keep me sober. Fear, consequences, I just left that hospital. The book says the certain consequences were a week or a month ago. Well, I won't be able to recall and bring into my mind with sufficient memory. It's just not going to work. It might sober me up for a little bit. But again, that mental obsession is going to come right back in there and hijack my mind and tell me there doesn't have to be a cloud in the sky, and it hijacks. I don't have to have problems to think that that mental obsession is not going to appear. Everything can be going great, and I decide somewhere along the lines, or I think I have the power of choice, because you see, I think that I just changed my mind on Thursday happy hour. But again, going back to that lottery and that donut, I don't have a problem with gambling. I don't have a problem with donuts. I could take it or leave it. Alcohol, for some reason, I can't take it or leave. But I'm so delusional, I cannot see the hundreds of times that I've said, I'm not going to do it again and did it again. As our book says, someday, somehow, I think I'm going to be able to figure this out. I don't need you people. Little did I know how much I really did. So at that meeting, that woman that took my hand and told me to say that I had a desire not to drink, a couple of women flooded me after the meeting, and thank God for responsible people. I am responsible. When anyone anywhere reaches out for the hand of help, I want AA to always be there, our responsibility pledge. I knew from that therapist that I needed to ask for a sponsor, and she said, I have a woman for you. I'm going to give her a call. That was Friday night. On Sunday, this woman called me. Thank God she called me, because I walked out of that meeting with a meeting list of your phone numbers, and I wasn't calling any of you. Hell no. But our book talks about the altruistic movement. And I am responsible. I don't sit around waiting for newcomers to call me to see how willing they are. My responsibility is to call them. Make it easy for them. All they have to do is answer the phone. Make it as simple as possible. And that's what she did for me. So I hadn't told that sponsor that I had been drinking through that weekend, nor that I was planning to drink when I got off the phone with her. And that is exactly what I did. But before I got off the phone with her, she asked me to do a couple things. She said, can you make a meeting every day? Sure, no problem. Can you send me three things you're grateful for at night? Yeah, I guess. Can you call me every day? Absolutely. And can you get on your knees and pray? I said, no. The last one, no. See, I was raised in a religious home, or what I thought was religious. sent to Christian schools, and in about sixth grade, I had written a petition for the boys throwing rocks at us because the topic of our class that day was about petitions. And I don't know exactly what happened, but I was expelled from that school. My parents are pretty upset with the school. We threatened to sue the school. Long story short, I was once again the victim, and I carried that around, the selfishness of what happened to me in that school over something so stupid, and the realization that I couldn't see that it wasn't the church or God that failed me, it was people that failed me. And see, I don't handle disappointment well, because I don't want to actually have to feel my feelings. Isn't that why I drank? Well, let's just spiritually bypass that one, even in sobriety. So she said, I don't care what you think. I'm asking you to take some action. This program is about taking action. So I drank Sunday night, and on Monday morning I went to work, and looking backwards again, here's how God shows up in my life. One more thing had to be taken front of me for me to surrender to actually do this program. But that morning I had gotten on my knees, and I said to a God that I didn't know that I had, didn't want, didn't think that I needed, the simple three words of, keep me sober. Because I couldn't even bring myself to say the word God. The boss would call me and tell me that I was screwing up my career. The client was really upset with me, and they were thinking about firing me. And I thought, oh my God, and the chaos and the problems in my head and the... I had a probation officer I hadn't been able to show up sober for. They were threatening to throw me in jail. I had ruined my teeth from all the throwing up from drinking, where they were so rotted that I couldn't even smile. But I don't think I have a problem. So I began to take suggestions and directions from that sponsor that I didn't like, even though I didn't believe that Alcoholics Anonymous was going to work for me. I ended up going into that probation, and they ordered me to a court-ordered IOP program. And at about 40 days sober, my sponsor had just started opening up the book with me, and one of my tests came back positive. And then it happened a second time. And I just lit on fire, and I wanted to throw chairs and tables and scream at the people in that place, because I really was sober. And I thought, how dare you have me praying to a God that I don't even believe in? What is this God doing for me? How can this be happening to me? Me, 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 me. Because I'm so self-centered, and I can't handle problems. You know what would end up happening? As much as I play that victim card, because I love playing the victim card, they were leaving the lids on the back of the screening test on the back of the toilet. Well, what are all my other people in my class doing on the back of the toilet? The amounts were so minimal that they were infecting the lid of my toilet and making my test positive. So my stay at IOP got extended for 8 months instead of 3 months, but I'm here today sober. Maybe, just maybe, God had that plan for me, because maybe if I hadn't stayed there, maybe I wouldn't have been given the time in Alcoholics Anonymous to work these steps, to have a spiritual awakening, to realize that I need this program to stay alive, sober, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and well off. See, my life is unmanageable by me. The bedevilment's on page 52. We couldn't control our emotional nature. All my mom has to do is pick up the phone and call me, or send me 10 text messages in a row, and boom, my emotional nature is thrown out the window. I am busy reacting to her instead of responding to her. I'm busy taking her personally. Don't you know I'm at work? How dare you? It's so annoying, the 10 pings on my text message when you do that. Again, I'm always the victim. See, I told you my mom, she's depressed, she's got OCD, and she's probably got some other things, but I've always valued playing the victim to my mom. My mom, like me, even though she's not an alcoholic, as our third step says, I operate from 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. Perhaps my mom, like me, the fourth step says, they like ourselves. See, the alcoholic family is to some extent ill, it says in the family afterwards. So maybe my mom can't show up. Maybe my mom doesn't have a program. Maybe my mom wants validation, love, and support. Maybe my mom, like me, plays her own scary movie in her head that she's the star of. See, scratch an alcoholic, find a codependent. What I used to do is, my mom lives in a really dark, scary cave, and I used to go in that cave and try to drag her out. And I would use anger and manipulation. You're not showing up the way I want you to right now. I'm going to get angry with you, because maybe I can use my anger as a way to get you to act right. because I'm so selfish and self-centered, or I behave that way, that I think that somehow I'm going to gain possession and control to get her to act in a way that she's not capable of acting, because I make demands on other people. And I don't know that. So I begin to awaken to these things. I begin to see how unmanageability plagues my life, that my life is not manageable by me. That M-dash separates two separate thoughts. I'm powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable by me. And I begin to see that, and I've gone through exercises in sobriety over and over again. I recently got a new job. My life got real unmanageable again. Let's take a look at that. Where is God not working out your life? A good speaker, I think it was Bob D, said, the thing that you think about in your day the most, if you think about a pie chart, the biggest slice of the pie, whatever you were spent thinking about, that's where you're agnostic. That's where you're in self-reliance. That's where you want to fix, manage, and control and figure it out. And that's how I spent my life. See, I'm an extremely intelligent woman. I told you I graduated college. But I think that my emotions, ideas, attitudes, and emotions, which were once the guiding force of me, are somehow going to get me out of this whole thing. And I didn't know that I needed to have a rearrangement, a transformation. What we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's soul work. I can't explain it. I just know that I took these steps, I took this process, and I am not the same person that I used to be. I can behave that way at times, but I have what I call these big islands of peace. But it took going through the work to see, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I said, I don't want the God thing. She should just act as if. In that moment where you feel fearful, squirmy, judgmental, opinionated, act as if you had a God and ask that whatever it is, how that God would have you do, see, act, and feel in that moment. Just pretend, borrow my God for the day. And I became willing because I read We Agnostics and I began to see that you like me and I'm all over there. I don't want to believe the God piece. Our book says that. More than half of us were unwilling. So I take the next action and I get into the third step and I begin to see how I want to run the show all the time. I want to arrange the lights and the scenery. I should, they should, the world should. I have been shitting all over the place. I can still shit all over the place. I can get in my car and be like, you know what, that guy should not be going the speed limit in the fast lane when I'm trying to get here. Because see, in Bill's emotional sobriety letter, he says we have faulty emotional dependencies where we demand possession and control of everyone to get on board with how we think, the way we think they should be acting and behaving. That's the insanity of alcoholism. I am so immature that I want everybody to get with my program. I make demands on other people, that mom, to act right. And if you're not going to, I'm going to use anger and manipulation to get you to do what I want. Or I'll go in the opposite. You know what? I'm getting married in May. She told me the other day, I'm not coming to your wedding. And she said it in a very nice, unkind way. That's my mom. I could have reacted very harshly to that. I could have reacted, period. And instead I went, there's an emotional rise coming up through my throat right now, and the best thing I can do is not say anything, because whatever comes out of my mouth when I have an emotional rise is not going to be good. So I get a built-in pause button by making it to step 10. In the fourth step, I begin to see that my mom, I've been placing these unreasonable demands on her. I want my mom to be a mom, this loving, kind, gentle person that wants to be at her daughter's wedding. I'm making her be someone that I want her to be, someone that she's not. That's what's causing my suffering. I'm attached to the idea of how the situation should look. And what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous is I show up and I take the action and I let go of the outcomes. My mom doesn't have to be at my wedding. I'm going to be okay. But I can also do what we call the spiritual bypass. You know what? Just turn it over. Let go. Let God. All I hear when people tell me is that deny, deny, deny. We have to start dealing with our feelings instead of this self-hate where I should be able to handle this. I should just be able to turn it over. I should just get over it. How about it's really sad not having a mom that actually wants to come to your wedding? How about having a little grief because I don't have that mom that wants to come to my wedding. I'm not saying sitting there for 3 days and eating a box of chocolates and not showing up for life. But to acknowledge what it is that I'm feeling instead of spiritually bypassing, like, turn it over, let go, let God, live and let live. Today, I'm actually able to be comfortable in my human emotions and go to God. I get to step 4 and 5 and I begin to see all these things about me that make me feel really squirmy and uncomfortable, that I take everything personally, that I value being a victim. And of course I want to let these things go. So I get to 6 and 7 and I think, oh my God, who wouldn't want to let these things go? 6 and 7 is a journey of awareness and humility. Not to be like, God's going to remove all these things from me. God's not going to take them all from me. If God struck me white as snow, as our 12 and 12 says, then why would I have any reason to seek God if he made me perfect spiritually? The spiritual bypass and 6 and 7 is about realizing my human inadequacies. That I am perfectly whole as an imperfect human being. That as these things crop up in my life, when I become aware of that emotional rise cropping up through my gut, that I have the awareness that I'm about to react instead of respond, that nothing good's going to come out of my mouth, that I have that awareness and the humility to go to God in that moment and say, God, I need a new perspective, or I need your duct tape over my mouth right now. The humility to do that, and God, in the next moment, I will check back in with you in the next moment. And so 6 and 7 is the heart of our program, the middle of our steps, and so much of what I do day in, day out, all day long. God, give me a better topic in my mind. God, help me see the truth. God, help me get out of self. God, help me be, feel, do, see, act as you, God, would have me be, see, do, act, and feel. I go through the amends process. I've been through the steps 3 times. All of my amends are current, thank God. But the first time I did them, I thought, oh my God, this is a lot. But what step 8 and 9 really taught me was how to trust this God that I didn't really trust and believe in. How to show up and knock on people's doors and ask for appointments. To go in there and admit the wrongs that I've done. And to say, here's how I commit to changing my behavior. I had a great career with Nestle Purina for 10 years. I was blowing up that career because I was getting so drunk on the plane ride out to work and on home. You couldn't take me to dinner, one of the company dinners, because I would just embarrass everyone. That gentleman had moved, and he had a flight into New Jersey, which is, again, how God works, that I didn't have to fly out to him. He met me at the airport, and he is now the vice president of Nestle. And, of course, fearful alcoholism says, oh, my God. You know, we put people on pedestals sometimes instead of just seeing them as another human being created by the universe, higher power or something. Our book has 26 other words in our book for what God is. So if you don't like the word God, if you don't like the pronouns in the book, change them. Change them. That's what I did. But I began to see 26 other words, and that God showed up at that airport that day. And what that man said to me was, Beth, when I hired you, what I saw from you is what I wish you could have seen in yourself. We loved you. You have extremely credible work ethic. You're a smart girl, but you didn't love or respect yourself. And see, isn't that the theme in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that I don't believe myself is good enough, and that's why I fill the void, because I can't deal with my feelings. I can't deal with life. And if I truly thought that I'm such a wonderful human being and so amazing, then why would I get fearful and afraid? Why would I be trying to get everybody to get on board with the way I think if I was truly secure in who I am? If I'm truly secure in who I am, then I have no judgment of you. Then I'm not sitting around trying to get everybody to align with and align with my will. I'm not sitting around objecting everything, because those days when I really love people because I love myself, Nothing bothers me. When I'm not right with me and I'm not right with God, everything bothers me. And that's why 6 and 7 is so important. But what that man did for me a couple years later is so last year when, or actually it's been 2 years now when COVID hit, I live alone, I work from home, I lost my job on top of getting Lyme's disease. I was so ill, I could not physically walk. I was 2 years sober, and I was thinking, God, why? Why, God? And see, I think that's a question of spiritual immaturity. God doesn't do these things to me. It's life. What God does and what God promises me is like I'm on an airplane, and God's going to lift, fly that plane and lift me above that turbulence and those clouds. And God's going to bring me to the still air and the peace that's always available to me and give me those moments, those islands of peace. But God doesn't promise me that I'm not going to have more turbulence when he lands the plan. What God promises me is that he's going to be there with me to give me, as our book says, the strength, the power that I need to get through it. But see, I live in fantasy thinking. I just want God to wave his magic wand and get me out of this. Like when all the times I was in the back of the cop car and he didn't do that. Because again, it goes back to my level of maturity of what God is and what God does. I had to learn from other women in Alcoholics Anonymous how to have a relationship with a God that was bigger than me. And thank God for them, because I continued to grow in my awareness. God was never missing. I just had no awareness. I had no way to connect. I didn't know how to. I didn't want to. Ego is so strong in me. Ego is the bully standing in front of me that's screaming at me all day long, and there's this voice that's whispering like the angel and the devil. I kind of knew at times when I was doing something I shouldn't do, but God's voice is that still, quiet voice that I can only hear when I take that pause to get out of the craziness that's going on up here, the self-talking, negative, opinionated, judgmental mind. When I'm able to pause and be quiet and get in contact with that power that isn't me, that is where I gain the insights. There's also the 10th step. And I love the 10th step because I write them out often, because I will never rise and be Miss Spiritual AA Beth. The gift that God has given me is my human inadequacies. And the gift that AA has given me is that the only mistake that a loving God made in my eyes is that my eyes look outwards at you, and God has turned my eyes back inwards at me most days, which is why I have a 10th step, because my eyes are looking at you. My most recent 10th step was this past week. I was the secretary for my home group, helping the new secretary get set up. There's a gentleman in my home group that said, when are those hybrid meetings going to be done? I'm not coming back to the home group until you get rid of the Zoom portion of them. Has absolutely nothing to do with me. But I thought, how dare he? Whoa, you're not coming back to the home group? Well, isn't that immature? He's entitled to his opinions. And as our tradition says, every group has the right to be wrong. He has the right to be wrong without me telling him all about it. But I had to let go of those judgments, the shoulds. He should be more spiritual. He should know my sponsee, you know, is immune compromised and can't come back to him. He should. I'm not aligned with reality. I'm objecting to it. I'm taking something that has nothing to do about Beth, completely personal, and making it all about me. How dare he? Oh, I know. He needs to, you know, work with his sponsor. This is the stuff that goes on in my mind, and this is why I need a sponsor and the 10th step, because I can't self my way out of it. I can't always see it clearly. My thinking has cleared up. I would say 80% of my thoughts today are a lot better than they used to be, but I still got that 20% where I got to be honest and accountable to somebody who can see the truth about me. I can't self my way out of it. Same mind that created the problem, I think Einstein said, can't fix it. 10-step also says we cease fighting anything or anyone. And that means even on Facebook and sitting with my family who wants to talk politics. I've had to learn that I value my peace more than anything. And that's where God is in the peace, not in the controversy, not in the fighting everyone. And I don't have to be there defending myself and telling you where you're wrong and trying to make myself feel right. See, I thought an egomaniac meant that it was somebody who really thought so highly of themselves and was showing off all the time. But that's not what ego is. Ego wants to prove that I'm not a nobody. Ego's got an agenda. It comes from a place of lack or attack. Ego, at best, is silly, and it says stupid things to me, like, oh, Beth, you sinner, shit all over that person. And at worst, it says, wow, I can't believe you said that about that guy, and your sponsor read that inventory. Aren't you more spiritual by now, Beth? That's all ego. The belief that I'm not whole. And what AA in a 10-step does is it gets me out of the driver's seat and it stops fighting. It begins to see that what annoys me about you is what I'm denying in me. You know, in the beginning of my first year of AA, I had a sober sister. She would just cry at the drop of a dime. I mean, I'd be like, oh my God, here she goes. She's going to cry again. You know why that bothered me? Because I don't want to admit that I'm sensitive. I don't want to be seen as weak because I believe that crying is weak. That's an old idea and belief. The result was no until we let go. Absolutely. I don't want to be seen as vulnerable. I want to be seen as strong and Beth and Miss Spiritual AA. And that's the insanity of alcoholism. And so I begin to learn, even on Facebook, especially when the COVID thing happened, the incredible self-righteousness of everyone else. Well, what's in you is what's in me, and that's why I don't like it. The golden rule isn't that we do to others what we do to ourselves. We do to others what we're already doing to ourselves. So if I'm judgmental and critical of myself, I'm going to be judgmental and critical of you. If I'm not loving and kind to myself, I can't give away what I don't have and be loving and kind to you. This is why it's so important in that 11th step that I sit down in prayer and meditation and connect with a power that isn't me so that I can learn who I really am. It says read spiritual literature. Every morning I get up and I pray. I spend a couple minutes in meditation and I don't have to be Miss Wonderful 20 minutes every morning. God doesn't make rules for me. I used to make rules for me. And the rules that I make for myself, I will make for others. So I had to throw out the old ideas and rules that I will not be loved by God unless I do this perfectly. So I never know what the morning is going to be like, and I don't set rules, I just do it. But I get a moment of peace, and I get clarity, and I get to connect with that God of my understanding who loves me and says I am whole and perfect, and I am imperfect, and God loves me as I am, not as I should be, because nobody is as they should be. And that's the beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, is getting me in touch with that power so that I can practice these principles in all my affairs, so that I can have a spiritual awakening, so that I can recognize my humanness in the moment, so that when I'm sitting around and I'm judging and I'm sitting there, oh, yeah, listen, that person in my home group, oh, yeah, I don't want to go near that one. I can forgive myself for those thoughts, not deny them and say, oh, you're such a piece of crap for still judging people, for somehow you now you should be more spiritual than that. It's to go, wow, hey, ego, knock it off. Ego's not going to go away, and it's not a bad thing. We're not going to smash it. What we're going to do is we're going to recognize what it is. Recognize what it is so that we can get connected to something bigger than us. Whatever you call that is your choice. I'm not a religious person. I don't have to be. That's the beauty of what Alcoholics Anonymous does, is that I'm not sitting around separating myself from others anymore. I'm not looking to be loved, comforted, and understood. I'm looking to love, comfort, and understand, regardless of whether or not you love, comfort, or understand me. So I'm not selfish and self-centered. I can behave that way. I don't identify myself as that. Anything that I identify myself as, ego loves and strengthens. So today I identify myself as what God has me be, which is those spiritual principles in our book. They're all over. Honest, integrity, patient, forgiving, tolerant. That's who we really are. If anybody's in here have struggling with the God piece, you're not missing it. It's deep down inside each and every one of us. It's just we teach you how to get in touch with it. Thanks for having me.